Vice President Mike Pence visited the demilitarized zone separating North and South Korea last night, a day after North Korea attempted but failed to launch a missile. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are going to talk about the high tension between North Korea and the United States this hour and talk about what happens next. Vice President Pence warned North Korea today that it could be in for the same treatment as Syria and Afghanistan, both of which the Trump administration bombed in this past month, if it continues its nuclear program. Pence says all options are on the table and that the era of strategic patience is over when it comes to North Korea. So what is your reaction to that? What do you think should happen now? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Dale Hirspring is with us. He is the University Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Kansas State University. And he is also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He is the author of several articles and books. He served in the U.S. State Department's Foreign Service and in the U.S. Navy. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for being with us. So well, what is your your overall reaction to here? Here we have, we're waiting for daring, showing strength, trying to stop North Korea from launching a missile, and it tries to launch a missile anyway.
Well, I think we're dealing with two very different things right now. One, in the case of Syria, we're dealing with national interests. In the case of Korea, you're dealing with a perhaps not totally present mind in the leader of North Korea. I mean, nobody knows what he's thinking, what he's planning, what he'll do. There's no rationality. We can make some pretty good guesses of what Putin will do because he's a rational actor. This guy is in North Korea. Kim Jong-un is anything but a rational decision maker.
Right, right. And they are all different, and we'll talk about some of those other areas in a minute, but what is your reaction to the administration now saying that the era of strategic patience with North Korea is over and now all options are on the table?
Well, I think they mean exactly that if Kim is going to make this argument that he'll respond with nuclear weapons, then he basically intimidates the United States if the United States does nothing. We had enough of a problem with our last president who made threats and never followed them up. This guy is going to simply do the hardball diplomacy and say, look, if I make a threat, I mean it. And so you need to understand it in the hope that maybe this will break through. This clown in North Korea in Pyongyang will break through his lack of intelligence to understand that this is a different president, and this guy will use the weapons that he feels necessary, and he'll use them against North Korea, regardless of what the consequences may be.
Is it your thought that that bombing in Afghanistan with the so-called mother of all bombs was also to send a message to North Korea?
Well, the administration has denied it, and they say it's all been made, but the decision was all made by the commander on the scene in Afghanistan. I have my doubts. I think it makes a very good point, and you have to be, you know, have something else than normal people have for brains to not realize that is a that dropped on the nuclear area in North Korea would put it back in a Stone Age.
Yeah. But North Korea does seems to be... I mean, they went on a big parade. They were showing off missiles and weapons that a lot of us apparently hadn't seen before. A big show of showing off this force. And then even with an aircraft carrier in the wings and all sorts of warnings to not fire off a missile over the weekend, North Korea failed, but it tried to fire off a missile. So
they don't think we're serious. And if they go nose to nose, they think we'll blink first. And this guy, most of the world has now gotten across through their heads, including China, including Russia, that this guy in charge now is not playing games. And you've seen different sort of approach from other countries because of it. But the North Koreans simply are living this lola land, and they think that they can just go ahead and bluff us right down the line, and we're saying no, you can't. And it's pretty hard to get through somebody who's just a dunderhead and just will not accept the fact that the world has changed out there. Mm-hmm. That with this president, if anything, our last president made it good for this president, because by not doing anything, and when this guy comes in, he looks 20 feet tall instead of 10 feet tall because he's prepared to do something. The North Koreans, I don't know what you do. You'd have to talk to a psychiatrist as to what you do to get through to this guy that you're playing, what you're playing with. And he could be mentally unbalanced. He perhaps doesn't give a damn about his country. Certainly the way he treats his people, there's no logic to it. He's just putting everything in nuclear weapons. People are starving to death. The height of a South Korean and North Korean, the South Koreans, I think, 2 or 3 inches taller because of the better food. It just boggles the mind, to be absolutely honest.
Yeah. So it sounds like you think that President Trump is doing a pretty good job handling not just this situation, but Syria and Afghanistan as well.
Well, I think first of all, what he did with Syria, Afghanistan, I don't think has been handled at all. But in Syria, I think what he did is he made it clear to the Russians to the Syrians and then through them to the Russians that they're serious. And I think the Russians can talk to us privately. We have a good relationship with them in terms of being able to talk to them, and they're rational decision makers. They have to calculate now what this will cost, and if it's worth doing it, and in that sort of way. In terms of Afghanistan, I think that this is just a Russian game to try and stretch us thin, because we have a much smaller army than we used to have, and it's going to be hard for us to both handle things in Syria, handle things in Afghanistan, handle things in Korea. It becomes very difficult to stretch yourself that far.
Yeah, but as for at least so far with the standoff with North Korea, and by saying all options are on the table and we're not going to look the other way anymore, that you're giving Donald Trump high marks for that?
Oh, I'm saying that's better than not saying anything. I mean, it's better than what our last president did. Now, is there a way somewhere between the two that could have been used? I expect that there may be, but given the reality, it doesn't really matter, because what matters now is the fact that we have the cards that are dealt. The cards that are dealt are Trump and what he's done. And what he's done is, I think, better than what his predecessor did.
Yeah. We have some people on Facebook. Vang on Facebook says, "Not our problem. We are not the moral and ethnic police. Let the Chinese, the Koreans, the Russians, the Japanese deal with this." Go ahead.
The problem is they're not dealing with it, and it is our problem, because the North Koreans are having all kinds of impacts on South Korea. They're having it on Japan now, and they're having the Chinese. Having one Russian, one of my former Russian colleagues said to me when I asked him about, this is off the record, and I asked him, I said, well, what are you guys going to do with the North Koreans? He said, happily give them to you and let you worry about them. We think they're nuts. And that the point is, as long as you've got somebody like that, it is our problem, because they are, you know, they are impacting on the whole world and the whole region, and we're heavily involved in that region.
Yeah. Well, will China be able to put any kind of pressure on North Korea to have it?
They can. That's a very good question. They can, but will they? I don't know. I'm not a sinologist, and I don't know what. They certainly are capable of doing it. They could bring North Korea to a halt because that's where they get all their supplies. Yesterday, apparently, or day before yesterday, they turned back their coal ships, which the North Koreans have been sending to China to pay for their food and so forth. Will they send them back? Now the question is, and I have no idea, as to whether or not the North Koreans are going to be able to buy stuff on credit because they use it to feed their country.
Yeah. What do you make of President Trump not calling China a manipulator of currency, especially if they're helping with North Korea?
Because he's a negotiator, not a politician. The one thing that you find when you try and compare Putin and president is that the Putin is not a negotiator. He's not a wheeler dealer. Obama is, and if something was A yesterday, and it makes more sense to make of a deal of having it B today, then it's B today. That helps get the wanted goal. If you're a negotiator and the price of something is worth something and you can change it by making it a little bit higher, a little bit lower, you do, because then you get the agreement. And that's the way that most Trump thinks. And so he'll sit and say, oh, okay, well, that's green. No, if I make it red, then I can get an agreement. Okay, so now it's red.
So do you think it's unfair for the people saying that he's flip-flopping on all these areas? Because first he said we don't want to go into Syria, and then, you know, during campaign, you know, then we go into Syria, and you know, he calls China a lot of names, and now China is a friend.
Joy, that is an absolutely fair question, and the point is, it's not a fair question if you're talking about a negotiator. If you're talking about a wheeler dealer, if you're talking about the ideological people who have strong ideological feelings and voted for him because they believed he was on the right or the far right or wherever you want to put him on the spectrum, but anyway, he was conservative. And he is now modifying some conservative positions to get an arrangement, to get a deal. Yeah, they're right. And that's what he'll continue to do. If he has to run around in Bermuda shorts and that'll get him a deal, that's what he'll do. Because that's the kind of mentality that he has. And that's why he's worth so much money, is he is able to seek deals and figure them out. And you're right, he flip-flops on things, but in his mind, what he's doing is rearranging the chess players on the board in order so he can get the king.
We are talking with Dale Hurstspring. He is a professor emeritus of political science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. He served in the U.S. Navy and in the U.S. State Department's Foreign Service. And we're talking with him about a number of foreign affairs issues before President Trump, focusing first on North Korea and Vice President Mike Pence in North Korea today, talking about what needs to be done to try to denuclearize North Korea. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are talking about international relations and some very significant foreign policy issues before the United States, focusing mostly on Korea and North Korea right now, as Vice President Mike Pence is in South Korea. He visited the demilitarized zone yesterday, separating North and South Korea. is saying that all options are on the table in dealing with North Korea and its nuclear threat. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We are talking with Dale Hirspring, who is a professor emeritus of political science at Kansas State University and an expert on foreign relations. Before we take some calls, Professor Hirspring, should it come down to the U.S. Sending a missile into North Korea because we perceive it to be a threat. How do you see North Korea reacting to that or responding to that?
Oh, it's going to be a very bloody affair, I think. Compared to Syria, it's going to be a disaster. I mean, you've got 40,000 artillery pieces across. They can hit Seoul and the region area around it. They've done graphs showing how disastrous it would be. I mean, maybe a million people will die in that sort of thing. And if we put things in the north, probably fewer will die, but it could well develop into an all-Korea war, both sides deeply involved and both sides suffering very heavy casualties.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is when you make threats, you can argue you should make threats, you shouldn't make threats. That's a fair question. But once you make a threat, you've either got to follow it up and do what you say you're going to do, or else you're going to end up having nobody paying any attention to anything you say.
Yeah. Vice President Pence also said the U.S. is going to redouble its efforts to bring diplomatic and economic pressure to bear on North Korea. And while all options are on the table, he said the U.S. hopes that this can be resolved peaceably.
And what he means by that is they're going to work overtime with the Chinese. Chinese hold the key. The Russians, the Russians play a propaganda game, but they don't want any part of this thing. They think, as I just mentioned, they think the guy's nuts. And so it's basically comes down to the Chinese because they're the ones that have the leverage. So they're the ones that hold the key to a peaceful settlement of the whole thing. Is if they basically cut off North Korea and take all the crap that it'll take for saying, oh, well, you gave in to the capitalists. And if they go ahead and do that, it'll be a very peaceful ending. But they'll also run the risk, if things are not handled right, of having South Korea on the Yalu River. And that's their nightmare.
Why? Why is that their nightmare?
Because if South Korea is on the Yalu River, then so is the United States. Because you can't have the South Korean military up there without the United States. They're so heavily locked. They're so closely locked together. I mean, that's what they see is instead of having them way down south, they've got them right up on their border, and all that has all kinds of implications for both military, for intelligence, for spying, things like that. And that's their nightmare. Is that out of this whole thing will come a unified Korea with the South, with the United States heavily involved in the new unified Korea.
Our guest is Dale Hirspring. He is the University Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Kansas State University. He's a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, and we are welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. What are your thoughts or concerns regarding the tensions with North Korea? In particular, North Korea failed to launch a missile on Saturday night, I believe it was. But they tried. It was a failure. What are your thoughts of Vice President Mike Pence saying that all options are on the table when it comes to dealing with North Korea and its nuclear threat, and that the U.S. is not going to look the other way? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's go to Mark in Appleton. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Just two points.
One is, if Kim really is as irrational as your guest says, and I'm not challenging that, then it seems to me perhaps it's not very wise to be challenging, be as bellicose as the president has been. And secondly, more even more important, I haven't heard anybody talk about the fact that the president does not have the power to take the country to war without congressional approval. And yet everybody's talking about it, what Trump will do. And as again, as your guest says, this could start an all-out war if we were to send quote-unquote preventive missiles into North Korea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. First of all, is the guy playing rational? Who's rational? All I can tell you is the majority of leaders seem to think that I read the Germans and most of the European media, they think he's nuts. They think he's irrational and not something you can deal with. But as far as your second point...
Let me just jump in, though, Professor Hirschberg. I think what Mark is saying, if somebody is so irrational and crazy, and I know everybody says that, we're poking this crazy person.
Okay. He's right. And you're right, but what are you going to do? That's what you got to deal with. If you sit back and do nothing, he gets away with whatever he wants to do. If you take him on, you run the risk of turning on a crazy man and living up with the irrationality that he may bring about, which will cause horrendous damage. But if you don't do something, then he's just going to go take him another bite, another bite, another bite.
Let me ask this. There have been some who say, I mean, he does fire off missiles every other month. And we've heard all sorts of horrible things about how he treats the people of North Korea. But I also, there are some who say, he doesn't, it's his way of saving North Korea, that if, North Korea might cease to exist if he wasn't pounding his chest like this. And he has a lot to fear, and he wants to be talked to, and he wants to be negotiated with. And so why don't we do that?
Well, we've tried it. Now we've tried it at least, I think, four times. Well, we have given him economic goods, which is what he needs so much to feed his population, in return for his actions to demilitarize the move he's got now for nuclear weapons, to stop it and turn it back, to take them apart. And every time he's lied to us, and every time he's gone right back to it. I mean, if you want to go do it again, what chance is there he'll do anything? We talked to him. We talked to him until we're blue in the face. Clinton tried it. Obama tried it. Bush tried it. Everybody's tried talking to him, and he's not talkable to, if you can use that, if that phrase makes any sense. It's just that, we've sort of reached the end of the line. It's time. Either now you're going to stop and get rid of those weapons and return for something, or you're going to find us getting rid of those weapons for you.
And I'm sorry, then Mark also wanted to know, doesn't Congress have to declare war?
That's a valid question. Having spent my life in Washington, in and out of it, I can tell you exactly how you handle that one. If you're in the executive branch, what you do is, since the president has control over military forces, is you order in a major attack, and then you've got, let's say, 50, 60,000 troops in there involved on their way. And what are you going to do, turn down support for them? I doubt seriously there's any Congress in the United States, regardless of how liberal they are, is going to turn down support for our guys overseas when they're in a major battle just to protect the United States because the bad guys did X, Y, or Z.
Let's go. Thank you, Mark, for the call. Dennis in Appleton is with us. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, I was just going to go back to 1968, and I'm sure you heard of the Pueblo, where North Korea decided that our ship was in their waters, and they actually captured that ship, tortured our crew members, and then shot down the plane later, and we did nothing about it. Am I correct on that?
No, we know a lot about it. I mean, first of all, the Pueblo is now a tourist item in North Korea. You can go to North Korea, you can go on board the Pueblo. It's used as a propaganda piece. There have been the diary of one of the guys who was on the crew. I think it was the CEO is available. There's a lot of material available on what happened. It no longer makes any sense to say it was classified, which it was, because the North Koreans have it, so why are you trying to keep anybody else? So it's pretty well widely known, the whole event and what happened, and I think all of the sailors are back, and I think it's now part of history.
Professor Hurstbring, that, you know, hey, with that happening, why didn't we respond, you know, in kind then rather than wait until now?
Well, I mean, we had different president, different mentality, I don't know. I can only tell you at the time we were afraid if we responded, it would just... there's always a fear that if you respond, you'll just make it bigger than it is. And what you've got now as opposed to then is you've got a president who says, look, enough, no more. We're going to stop playing this game of every time he does something, we figure out the way to handle him is to be nice to him and give him some food to get the public pressure off of him so his people can eat. I mean, you're right, 68, why didn't we do something? Well, we were still back at that time playing the happy warrior type sort of thing, that we would show him how good we were, and that would convince him to back off.
Yeah. I'm wondering how much of a threat is North Korea specifically to the United States? Do we think that he can fire off a missile from North Korea and hit the U.S. mainland?
I am not a scientist. I don't know. I can tell you there are rumors that they could hit Hawaii and they could hit the very west coast of California. There are also rumors that he couldn't. There are, in fact, rumors, and this is nothing more than rumors, that part of the reason that missile failed was we were interfered with his electronics through some sort of a secret approach. If we did, that's the best thing that could possibly happen, because that'll stop a war real fast and nobody will get killed. But it may not be true. But nobody knows I think I've read just about anything, and everything is available in English or German or Russian, and nobody knows. The Russians themselves make it very clear they don't know. If the Koreans could, as I told you, the Russians tell me that they think he's nuts.
The South Koreans, with the help of the U.S., are putting in place, or maybe it's there already, a missile defense system.
Right.
Can you tell us anything about that?
Again, I'm not a technician. The missile system is infuriated the North Koreans because it does have the capability of bringing down a lot of the missiles the North Koreans have. How soon it'll be operational, how soon it'll actually be able to do it, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know they're in a process of putting it in.
Dawn on Facebook says, my daughter is teaching in Hiroshima, Japan right now. Should I or should she be worried about the situation and return to the United States? I mean, you can't necessarily tell her what to do, but is this, would the United States tell people to get out of the area if they thought there was...
The way the embassy works is if the United States State Department issues a threat of threatening area, as they have in places like Syria, they would, if they thought there was a clear and present danger of the North Koreans bombing, firing, whatever, against Japan, they would issue an order. They have not done anything like that. In either South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, they have not done that at all. So that means it's not dangerous enough for the State Department to move in and act. If my daughter, let's put it this way, if my daughter were in Hiroshima, Would I be concerned? And my own response is no, no more than any place else, because once one of those things starts, who knows where it's going to end.
John from Milwaukee emailed. He says, what about the fact that North Korea has a 500,000 man standing and ready army? If we have a diminished military, how are we going to deal with those numbers? Also, not to mention China borders North Korea, and their military is even larger. They backed North Korea in the last hot war. Why wouldn't they now?
Okay, you got the military in North Korea, you serve 11 years. We had a draft that served two. So that's why you get such a massively large army. The problem is the only way you can stop the North Koreans in any kind of a conflict like this is with technology, because our technology is far superior to theirs. We have a problem because of the way it was ignored under Obama. What we have to do is, and I'm not privy to the secrets. The exercise they're going through now that the North Koreans are complaining about, I've been through that. I commanded a unit in that, and I know what that's about. And that's maybe mobilizing and attacking the North Koreans should they try. But I have no doubt in my mind that you bring a carrier flotilla over as we have, they can do a tremendous amount of damage. Now, we're going to take it, too. We have 28,500 troops on the border. Those troops will probably be overrun very quickly. Then what you're going to have is the long sort of constant battle to get it back.
Let's take a call next from John in Madison. Hello, John.
Good morning.
Morning. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a friend in Seoul, Korea, and I've been emailing him. And it was interesting yesterday, his comments were that they're not as concerned over there about war starting right away as we seem to be here. Maybe it's part of the media buildup here, but I mean, they're concerned and they're worried, but his viewpoint was that we're kind of sensitized to all this and, you know, we're just living life as we are.
Yeah, that
sounds very accurate to me, and I think some of this is media hype. I think that basically, if you ask a South Korean, the ones that I know, if you ask them what you're going to do, they're going to say, "Well, what do you expect us to do?" I mean, what good does it do us living in Seoul to become psychopathic because we think the North is going to attack? If the North attacks, the North attacks. There's nothing we can do about it one way or the other.
We are talking with Dale Hirschspring. He is a professor emeritus of political science at Kansas State University. He's a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. He served in the U.S. State Department's Foreign Service. And he also served in the U.S. Navy. We are talking with him about North and South Korea and the relationship between North Korea and the United States, and we're welcoming your questions, your thoughts, your concerns. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our program is prompted by the high tension over North Korea and its testing of nuclear missiles. Vice President Mike Pence warned North Korea today that North Korea could possibly be in for the same bombing treatment as Syria and Afghanistan if it continues with its nuclear program. The vice president said that all options are on the table. What do we make of this, what do you hope happens next? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about foreign policy and the Trump administration, focusing mostly on the Korean Peninsula, as Vice President Mike Pence is in South Korea, warning North Korea that it could be in for strikes if it continues with its nuclear program. But we are also talking with our guest about other foreign policy issues, including Syria and Afghanistan. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions and concerns. How do you think President Trump is doing when it comes to these international situations? And is he making the right decisions with international relations? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. There is a new poll out from Marist College. It shows a drop in those who disapprove of President Trump's foreign policy decisions. 49% of voters disapprove of President Trump's handling of foreign policy. That's a drop from 56% in February. His approval rating in this area, however, has not seen much of an increase, going from 37% to 40%. Getting a little confused with the numbers there, but why do you think, Professor Hirschspring, less people are disapproving of Trump's foreign policy decisions?
Well, I think the biggest problem is for the overall disapproval, he's not following the normal way of doing things, and people are a little confused as to what in heaven's name he is doing, which is why McCain is right. We need a policy, but we don't know what our policy is. But he is, as far as he's doing something, people can say, well, by God, he got even with those Syrians. And by Lord, he's over there in South Korea. He's making it clear to the North Koreans either they show up or else. Now, that means he's got to do it. He's got to do something if they don't give up their nuclear weapons. That's going to be the push comes to shove. Because then when that happens, are people going to be happy if Hawaii gets wiped out, and at the same time we also wipe out most of our division that's over there, and at the same time most of North Korea and a good part of South Korea? Will people accept that? I don't know. I mean, because one possibility, it could turn into ersatz nationalism. Another one, it could turn into just a feeling of, my God, I can't believe that we've done this and this thing happened. Is the blame going to fall all on Kim, or is it going to fall on us for having launched the first blow? Because that's what will probably happen, is we will be the one who launches the first strike.
Yeah. Robert on Facebook says, I don't get it. The U.S. has approximately 6,800 nuclear warheads, about equal to Russia. The U.S. is the only country that has dropped nuclear weapons twice on Japan, killing either directly or indirectly approximately 350,000 people, almost all civilians. We have been involved and are presently involved in illegal wars of aggression. Last week, we dropped the largest non-nuclear bomb ever, and now we are willing to go to war with countries that we claim might be working on the N-bomb, like Iran and North Korea, who may have 10 but have never used one against a foe. Is there something wrong here? Who is the threat? Robert asks.
Well, the threat is somebody who wants to upset the status quo. The status quo, there are a certain number of nuclear powers in the world. We don't like new additional nuclear states because it creates an uncertainty. And I think it'd be a lot different if North Korea had access to nuclear weapons, but we had the belief, and everybody else shared the belief, that North Korea was a rational decision maker. Don't forget, if he wants to bring up the peacemaking and the other sorts of things, North Korea has been criticized, has been blasted by almost every international organization there is for its use of development of nuclear weapons. It's not something that the United States just came up with. And what has happened with this president, you can disagree with it, you can criticize him for it. As he has said, I'm sick and tired of having the world criticizing this guy and having him hold us hostage. Because unlike the fact that we have all those nuclear weapons and we used them a long, long time ago, we only used them because there was lives at stake, and they were our lives. Now you've got a case in Korea where the situation is the guy wants to use them for what? Because he wants to use them. And that's the only reason, only logical reason, and we're not going to stand by and let that happen.
Let's go to Rocky in Wautoma. Hi, Rocky.
Hi, how are we doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Well, I just believe that President Trump is doing the right thing and keeping in check a narcissistic individual. And that person is also a threat to not more than just the United States. It's people all over the country, all over the world. So he's doing the right thing, I believe.
All right. Thanks very much. A quick react. I guess Rocky just thinks North Korea is a threat to not just the United States, perhaps, but that entire region of the world.
I'm sorry, I lost you about halfway through your question.
Oh, that's okay. It was Rocky who agreed with what President Trump was doing. I was just asking you to react.
Well, I mean, a lot of this is style. I don't mean to put it down the danger by saying something like that. Some people run diplomacy very, very quiet. You don't know what's even going on. It's all being handled very much behind the table. Here you've got much more bluster, much more out thing. Is that my style? No. I was a diplomat, and I would not have approached the thing this way. This is not my way of doing it. It's one reason why so many Foreign Service officers resigned rather than put up with this. It's one reason why State Department and the President are at war. Is because the State Department's totally opposed to this kind of war. You don't go around saying, you think you're tougher than me? Well, come over here and let's see who's the toughest. You go very quietly and try and find people to withdraw their support and leave them in a position where they can't act. So that's it's a system of style and which approach you like somebody to take. Because keep in mind, you can do a lot of things behind the scenes very quietly that you don't have to make into a threat, and therefore you don't have to back them up. But when you're doing this kind of style and you make threats, when they're public and everybody knows them and you've made them big time, you're going to have to back them up.
Dave on Facebook says, handling these sorts of issues used to be within the realm of the United Nations. That was before we undermined the UN so we could generate investor profits by proclaiming ourselves world policemen. Let's get out, stay out, mind our own business. Let me follow up on that comment, specifically Professor Hirschspring, with President Trump when he was... campaigner Trump and even before was making statements about how we can't be the world's policeman and we can't get involved in every conflict all over the world. And now we're really escalating things in three different conflicts around the world. What changed, do you think? What happened? Is this, do you think, what some say is the reality of the office of the presidency or what?
Well, first of all, we have never done what the UN said. I mean, only when we controlled it, for example, in Korea, in the original going in. I think what he's done is what he's facing is the reality of the office. And people who have spent their life in Washington as a congressman, as a senator, whatever, they understand how to make things move very quietly without anything happening. When a guy comes in like this who spent his life in high-level negotiation for deals and sit there and say, okay, well, I'll raise you, I'll give you 60 pounds of this, and we got a deal. When that kind of an approach is made public and is available for people to hear when they're sitting in front of the television, that looks like a radical change, and it looks like he's going to go to war. It's just his way of trying to negotiate, because when he says that, he means he's warning the Russians as well. He's warning everybody. Now, is he actually going to go to war against the Russians? I doubt it. The Russians don't want war, and we don't want war. We both, however, would like to maximize our input.
Yeah. One other reversal that I didn't ask you about that happened late last week was when President Trump said that he thought that in the past that NATO was obsolete. They, he says, are no longer obsolete. That now,
yeah. Well, his argument for that is simple. Now they're willing to pay, so they're no longer obsolete.
All right.
They were obsolete because they weren't paying. The Germans were paying, I think, 1.9%. And the rule is supposed to, everybody's supposed to pay, I think, 3%. And so he was saying to Merkel, basically, you're not paying because you're only putting in 1.9%. And so she had been a big battle going on over that with the Germans. But now that a lot of these countries have woken up and are starting to put in money into their military budget, then he's saying, oh, now it's useful.
Scott in Green Bay. I'm sorry, Scott in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Scott.
Thank you for taking my call. It seems all kind of sad that stuff has come to this. I remember in the late 90s, early 2000s, North and South Korea were kind of making peace. They were doing some peace overtures on their own terms. They're having like family reunification meetings, and South Korea was building some factories over the border to North Korea. And at the time, Madeleine Albright flew over there. You know, maybe the U.S. felt they had to be included or something, but it's really their peace to make. And they had like South Korea had this sunshine policy they're trying to work on. And then when President Bush was in office, he said, oh, axis of evil, somehow North Korea, Iraq, and Iran were some kind of allies, but they never were. It seems like, you know, it has to be on U.S. terms, whatever. Everything has to be what we want to be done. It seems to me like North and South Korea, it's their civil war and their peace to make on their own terms. The U.S. shouldn't be threatening people for this type of thing.
All right. Professor Hirschspring?
I only could hear about half of what he was saying. If I understand it correctly, the question is, why do we go in and worry only about the United States and not worry about the other side? And if that's, in fact, the correct thing, that's the way diplomacy is. Every country goes in maximizing concerns about themselves, not worrying about what the other guys think or want. And so whatever came out of that was basically, and I don't know, I mean, I know it happened, but I don't know anything about it, and there was a fight with the North Koreans, because North Koreans had wanted to attach all kinds of political things to it, and we didn't want them attached, and they gave, and what you got was the output from both countries. If you say the United States should give more, I don't know. You'd have to go through the protocols to try and find out what exactly was involved, who gave what, and why. And maybe he's right, maybe he's not. I don't know.
Yeah. We have just a minute to go, Professor Hirschspring. What's next?
I'm sorry.
What's next? What can we expect?
Oh God! If I could answer that one, you know, I wouldn't have to work the rest of my life.
What do you hope happens?
What I hope happens is sanity breaks out, and I hope that the Chinese are able to get the North Koreans to back down. We would have to give some sort of assurance to the North Koreans about not pushing, I mean, to the Chinese. We would have to give the Chinese assurance that we're not going to do anything to upset North Korea. And the North Koreans would then get, the Chinese would then tell the North Koreans, okay, now you have to do this, this, and this if you want any aid from us. If not, you're going to find your country falling apart. That's what would be the best of all possibilities. But the Chinese seem to be unwilling to really push matters that far. I hope they decide that they're going to, and that the North Koreans feel they have no alternative but to give in to the Chinese and to put down.
Got it. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.